45. A revelation. As the waves of the sea must continue to surge, so must our will continue resolute. Alone. The Voidbringers carried Moash to Revelar, a city in central Alethkar. Once there, they dropped him outside the city and shoved him toward a group of lesser parshmen. His arms ached from being carried. Why hadn't they used their powers to lash him upward and make him lighter as Kaladin would have? He stretched his arms, looking around. He'd been to Revelar many times, working a regular caravan to Kolinar. Unfortunately, that didn't mean he'd seen much of the city. Every city of size had a little huddle of buildings on the outskirts for people like him. Modern-day nomads who worked caravans or ran deliveries. The people of the Eaves, some had called them. Men and women who hovered close enough to civilization to get out of the weather when it turned bad, but who never really belonged. From the looks of things, Revelar had quite the Eaves culture now. Too much of one. The Voidbringers seemed to have taken over the entire storming place, exiling the humans to the outskirts. The Voidbringers left him without a word, despite having lugged him all this distance. The parshmen who took custody of him here looked like a hybrid between Parshendi warriors and the normal, docile parshmen he'd known from many a caravan run. They spoke perfect Alethi as they shoved him toward a group of humans in a little pen. Moash settled in to wait. Looked like the Voidbringers had patrols scouting the area, grabbing human stragglers. Eventually, the parshmen herded him and the others toward one of the large storm bunkers outside the city, used for housing armies or multiple caravans during high storms.
"Don't make trouble," a Parsh woman said, specifically eyeing Moash. "Don't fight or you'll be killed. Don't run or you'll be beaten. You're the slaves now."
Several of the humans, homesteaders from the looks of it, started weeping. They clutched meager bundles, which parshmen searched through. Moash could read the signs of their loss in their reddened eyes and ragged possessions. The Everstorm had wiped out their farm. They'd come to the big city looking for refuge. He had nothing on him of value, not any longer, and the parshmen let him go in before the others. He walked into the bunker, feeling a surreal sense of abandonment. He'd spent the trip here, alternately assuming he'd be executed or interrogated. Instead, they'd made a common slave of him? Even in Sadeus's army, he'd never technically been a slave. Assigned to bridge runs, yes. Sent to die. But he'd never worn the brands on his forehead. He felt at the Bridge 4 tattoo under his shirt on his left shoulder. The vast, high-ceilinged storm bunker was shaped like a huge stone loaf. Moash ambled through it, hands stuffed in his coat pockets. Huddled groups of people regarded him with hostility, even though he was just another refugee. He'd always been met with hostility, no matter where his storming went. A youth like him, too big and obviously too confident for a Dark Eyes, had been considered a threat. He'd joined the caravans to give himself something productive to do, encouraged by his grandparents. They'd been murdered for their kindly ways, and Moash, he'd spent his life putting up with looks like that. A man on his own, a man you couldn't control, was dangerous. He was inherently frightening, just because of who he was, and nobody would ever let him in. Except Bridge 4. Well, Bridge 4 had been a special case, and he'd failed that test. Graves had been right to tell him to cut the patch off. This was who he really was. The man everyone looked at with distrust, pulling their children tight and nodding for him to move along. He stalked down the middle of the structure, which was so wide it needed pillars to hold up the ceiling. Those rose like trees, soul cast right into the rock below. The edges of the building were crowded with people, but the center was kept clear and patrolled by armed parshmen. They'd set up stations with wagons as perches where parshmen were addressing crowds. Moash went over to one.
"In case we missed any," the parshmen shouted, "experienced farmers should report to brew at the front end of the chamber." He will assign you a plot of land to work. Today we also need workers to carry water in the city and more to clear debris from the last storm. I can take 20 of each.
Men started calling out their willingness, and Moash frowned, leaning toward a man nearby. They offer us work? Aren't we slaves?
Yeah, the man said. Slaves who don't eat unless they work. They let us choose what we want to do, though it's not much of a storming choice, one kind of drudgery or another.
With a start, Moash realized that the man had pale green eyes. Yet he still raised his hand and volunteered to carry water, something that had once been parchment work. Well, that was a sight that couldn't help but brighten a man's day. Moash shoved hands back in pockets and continued through the room, checking each of the three stations where parchmen offered jobs. Something about these parchmen and their perfect alethi unsettled him. The Voidbringers were what he'd expected, with their alien accents and dramatic powers. But the ordinary parchmen, many of them looked like Parshendi now, with those taller builds, seemed almost as bewildered at their reversal in fortune as the humans were. Each of the three stations dealt with a different category of labor. The one at the far end was looking for farmers, women with sewing skill, and cobblers. Food, uniforms, boots. The parchmen were preparing for war. Asking around, Moash learned they'd already grabbed the smiths, fletchers, and armorers, and if you were found hiding skill in any of these three, your whole family would be put on half rations. The middle station was for basic labor, hauling water, cleaning, cooking food. The last station was the most interesting to Moash. This was for hard labor. He lingered here, listening to a parchman ask for volunteers to pull wagons of supplies with the army when it marched. Apparently, there weren't enough chulls to move wagons for what was coming. Nobody raised their hands for this one. It sounded like ghastly work, not to mention the fact that it would mean marching toward battle.
They'll need to press the people into this, Moash thought. Maybe they can round up some light eyes and make them trudge across the rock like beasts of burden. He'd like to see that.
As he left this last station, Moash spotted a group of men with long staffs leaning against the wall. Sturdy boots, water skins, and holsters tied to their thighs, and a walking kit sewn into the trousers on the other side. He knew from experience what that would carry. A bowl, spoon, cup, thread, needle, patches, and some flint and tinder. Caravaneers. The long staffs were for slapping chul shells while walking beside them. He'd worn an outfit like that many times, though many of the caravans he'd worked had used parchmen to pull wagons instead of chuls. They were faster.
Hey, he said, strolling over to the caravaneers. Is Guff still around?
Guff?
One of the caravaneers said.
Old wheelwright, half a reed tall, bad at cussing?
That's him.
I think he's over there, the young man said, pointing with his staff. In the tents. But there ain't work, friend.
The shellheads are marching, Moash said, thumbing over his shoulder. They'll need caravaneers. Positions are full, another of the men said. There was a fight to see who got those jobs. Everyone else will be pulling wagons. Don't draw too much attention or they'll slap a harness on you, mark my words.
They smiled in a friendly way to Moash, and he gave them an old caravaner's salute, close enough to a rude gesture that everyone else mistook it, and strode in the direction they'd pointed. Typical. Caravaneers were a big family and, like a family, prone to squabbling. The tents were really some sections of cloth that had been stretched from the wall to poles driven into buckets of rocks to keep them steady. That made a kind of tunnel along the wall here, and underneath a lot of older people coughed and sniffled. It was dim, with only the occasional chip on an overturned box giving light. He picked out the caravaneers by their accents. He asked after Guff, who was one of the men he'd known back in the day and was allowed to penetrate deeper along the shadowy tent tunnel. Eventually, Moash found old Guff sitting right in the middle of the tunnel, as if to keep people from going farther. He had been sanding a piece of wood, an axle by the looks of it.
He squinted as Moash stepped up.
Moash, he said. Really? What storm and storm brought you here?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you, Moash said, squatting down beside the old man.
You were on Jam's caravan, Guff said. Off to the Shattered Plains. Gave you all up for dead. Wouldn't have bet a dun chip on you returning.
A wise enough bet, Moash said. He hunched forward, resting his arms on his knees. In this tunnel, the buzz of people outside seemed a distant thing, though only cloth separated them.
Son? Guff asked. Why are you here, boy? What do you want?
I just need to be who I was.
That makes as much sense as the Storm and Stormfather playing the flute, boy. But you wouldn't be the first to go off to those plains and come back not all right. No, you wouldn't. That's the Stormfather's storming own truth, that storming is.
They tried to break me. Damnation, they did break me. But then he made me again. A new man.
Moash paused.
I threw it all away.
Sure, sure, Guff said.
I always do that, Moash whispered. Why must we always take something precious, Guff, and find ourselves hating it? As if by being pure it reminds us of just how little we deserve it. I held the spear, and I stabbed myself with it.
The spear? Guff asked. Boy, you a Stormin' soldier?
Moash looked at him with a start, then stood up, stretching, showing his patchless uniform coat. Guff squinted in the darkness.
Come with me.
The old wheelwright rose, with difficulty, and set his piece of wood on his chair. He led Moash with a rickety gate farther into the cloth tunnel, and they entered a portion of the tented area that was more room-like, the far corner of the large bunker. Here, a group of maybe a dozen people sat in furtive conversation, chairs pulled together. A man at the door grabbed Guff by the arm as he shuffled in.
Guff, you're supposed to be on guard, fool man. I'm storming on storming guard, you pisser,
Guff said, shaking his arm free.
The Bright wanted to know if we found any soldiers. Well, I found a storming soldier, so storm off.
The guard turned his attention to Moash, then flicked his eyes to Moash's shoulder.
Deserter?
Moash nodded. It was true in more ways than one.
What's this?
One of the men stood up, a tall fellow. Something about his silhouette, that bald head, that cut of clothing.
Deserter, Bright Lord,
the guard said.
From the Shattered Plains,
Guff added. The High Lord, Moash realized. Paladar. Bama's kinsman and regent, a notoriously harsh man. In years past, he had nearly run the city to the ground, driving away many dark eyes who had the right of travel. Not a caravan had passed when someone hadn't complained about Paladar's greed and corruption.
From the Shattered Plains, you say,
Paladar said.
Excellent. Tell me, deserter, what news is there from the High Princes? Do they know of my plight here? Can I expect aid soon?
They put him in charge, Moash thought, spotting other light eyes. They wore fine clothing, not silks, of course, but well-trimmed uniforms, exceptional boots. There was food aplenty set out at the side of this chamber, while those outside scrounged and did heavy labor. He'd begun to hope. But of course, that had been stupid. The arrival of the Voidbringers hadn't cast the Light Eyes down. The few Moash had seen outside were merely the sacrifices. The fawning Dark Eyes at the periphery confirmed this. Soldiers, guards, some favored merchants. To damnation with them. They'd been given a chance to escape from the Light Eyes, and it had only made them more eager to be servants. In that moment, surrounded by the pettiness that was his own kind, Moash had a revelation. He wasn't broken. All of them were broken. A Lethe society, light-eyed and dark. Maybe all of humankind.
Well,
the regent demanded.
Speak up, man.
Moash remained silent, overwhelmed. He wasn't the exception, always ruining what he was given. Men like Kaladin were the exception, the very, very rare exception. These people proved it. There was no reason to obey Light Eyes. They had no power, no authority. Men had taken opportunity and cast it to the Krem.
I think there's something wrong with him, Bright Lord, the guard said.
Yeah, Guff added. Should maybe have mentioned he's Stormin' Strange in the head now, Stormin' Pisser.
Bah, the regent said, pointing at Moash. Have that one thrown out. We haven't time for foolishness if we are to restore my place. He pointed at Guff. Have that one beaten, and post a competent guard next time, Ked, or you'll be next.
Old Guff cried out as they seized him. Moash just nodded. Yes. Of course. That was what they would do. The guards took him under the arms and dragged him to the side of the tent. They parted the cloth and hauled him out. They passed a frazzled woman trying to divide a single piece of flatbread between three young crying children. You could probably hear their weeping from the Bright Lord's tent, where he had a stack of bread piled high. The guards threw him back out into the street that ran down the middle of the large bunker. They told him to stay away, but Moash barely heard. He picked himself up, dusted himself off, then walked to the third of the workstations, the one seeking hard laborers. There he volunteered for the most difficult job they had, pulling wagons of supplies for the Voidbringer army.